We saw in our last study that the time spent by Jacob in the house of Laban was marked by three distinct covenants between these two men. We saw that the first covenant was based on Jacob working for 7 years to obtain the hand of Rachel to be his wife. We saw that at the end of 7 years, it was Leah who became the wife of Jacob, and in the second covenant, Jacob agreed to work for another 7 years, having been given Rachel also to wife. We saw that during those second 7 years, there was in the home of Jacob disturbance and disagreement. This was based on the fact that the two wives understood that Rachel was loved by Jacob, but he had no love for Leah. During the time of Leah's distress and suffering, we saw that she bore him 4 children, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah. We can summarize what we were teaching regarding this time in the life of Jacob under 2 headings. We will see, indeed we have seen, that as far as Leah was concerned, there was faithfulness in a time of trouble. She referred to Jehovah, and we saw that at the end she says, "Now I will praise the Lord." So she referred to Jehovah in that way. And during the time of her trouble, she was faithful to the Lord. Let us, as we already noted, determine in times of trouble not to blame the Lord, but to be faithful to the Lord. But I want you to observe, if there was faithfulness in the time of trouble, there was also fruit from the trouble. Observe the sons born to Leah at that time: Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah. 2 of these names in particular must cause us to stop and consider. The 3rd son was Levi, the one from whom came the priestly tribe, the tribe that was prepared to stand with Moses against idolatry. The 4th son causes us to consider even more. As we look at his name, we realize that it is Judah. And of course, Judah was the one from whom came the kingly tribe. Indeed, the tribe from whom Messiah came. So, out of the time of suffering, despair and disappointment, from the wife who knew that she was unloved by her husband, and in her anguish gave Jehovah his place, there came blessing out of suffering, particularly in the birth of Levi and Judah. Remember that there can be fruit from God from times of anguish. Remember that there can be something for God's glory from times of suffering. And so it was with Leah. The birth of Levi and Judah particularly emphasizing this truth. Let us keep that in mind. So, in the anguish which Leah suffered, there was faithfulness, and from it there was fruitfulness. Now, we saw that this second covenant with Jacob had in it 3 distinct threads. The Lord and his compassion for Leah. Secondly, the confrontation between Rachel and Jacob. And thirdly, the conflict between Rachel and Leah. Let us now consider the 2nd thread. The confrontation between Rachel and Jacob. And we will read from the beginning of Genesis chapter 30. And when Rachel saw that she bare Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister, and said unto Jacob, Give me children, or else I die. And Jacob's anger was kindled against Rachel, and he said, Am I in God's stead, who hath withheld from thee the fruit of the womb? And she said, Behold my maid Bilhah, go in unto her, and she shall bear upon my knees, that I may also have children by her. And she gave him Bilhah, her handmaid, to wife, and Jacob went in unto her. And Bilhah conceived and bare Jacob a son. And Rachel said, God hath judged me, and hath also heard my voice, and hath given me a son. Therefore called she his name Dan. And Bilhah, Rachel's maid, conceived again, and bare Jacob a second son. And Rachel said, With great wrestlings have I wrestled with my sister, and I have prevailed. And she called his name Naphtali. Now, let us consider this confrontation between Rachel and Jacob. As Rachel saw Leah bearing sons to Jacob, there was born into her heart a deep and a great envy. I suppose we would not be surprised at that reaction. But I want you to observe, during this confrontation, there was firstly Rachel's envy, and there was secondly Jacob's anger. Rachel also was suffering pain and distress at this time. Do you see that by taking two wives like this, both are suffering? Leah, because of the lack of love of her husband, and Rachel, because of her fruitlessness. Suffering for both of them. Rachel tackles her suffering in a somewhat different way than Leah. Leah invokes the name of Jehovah. But into the heart of Rachel there comes a deep envy, which ultimately is given expression in the cry, Give me children, or else I die. It would appear that in her anger and envy, Rachel is blaming Jacob for her barrenness. Rachel is blaming Jacob because she has no children. Would it not have been better if she were to go into the presence of God and invoke his help? Do we sometimes tackle problems like that? When we are met with the difficulties of life and the problems of living, do we blame others instead of taking the problem into the presence of God? Rather than look for an answer, do we look for folks to blame? Rather than look for divine help, do we look for a scapegoat? And so here it would appear that Rachel is shifting the focus onto Jacob and saying, You are the cause of this difficulty. She misunderstood two things. She misunderstood, firstly, who was behind the circumstance, and she misunderstood, secondly, how the problem was to be addressed. In the difficulties of life, let us not make these two mistakes. Firstly, to fail to see that God is behind these things. Secondly, to fail to see that He and He alone is the answer to the problem. So Rachel made a mistake. Jacob's response was one of anger. Am I in God's stead, who hath withheld from thee the fruit of the womb? So what has happened by Rachel's outburst in her envy? It has simply added another dimension to the problems of the home. Now Jacob is angry, feeling that he is being blamed for that for which he has no responsibility. And such indeed it is. He is correct in a sense in what he says. Am I in God's stead, who hath withheld from thee the fruit of the womb? What can we see in this? Just another strand in the education of Jacob in the ways of God. We have already considered the fact that the time of sojourn in the home of Laban was for Jacob a time of divine discipline. He has already learned what it is to be deceived, having himself deceived his father, and in a sense his brother. Now he is learning that there are some things that he cannot manipulate, that God is ultimately in control. He is learning that there are issues which are beyond him to solve, and every wish and desire which he has cannot be obtained by his own works, or even his own craftiness, or his own abilities. Some things must be left with God. So the anger of Jacob is a result of the envy of Rachel. The solution that Rachel comes to is one that surely she should have known would but lead to further problems. Was she not aware of what took place between Abraham and Hagar? But she goes for the same solution. Now, no doubt this was a solution which the world of the day reckoned to be in order. By giving her handmaid to her husband, she was effectively claiming that the handmaid's children were hers because the handmaid belonged to her. This was a solution known to the world. But we should always keep in mind that the ways of the world are not the ways of God. Now, having said that, we do observe that children were born and they became part of the household of Jacob and the head of some of the tribes of Israel. So we learn a salutary lesson that God can use that of which he does not necessarily approve. The fruit, the children who came from this, were indeed used of God, but that does not indicate that the initial act had his approval. Let us keep that in mind. Apparent outward evidences of what seems to be blessing is no proof that God is pleased with the action. So, children are born. Do you observe what Rachel says? And Rachel said, God, Elohim, hath judged me. We already have noted that she does not use the name Jehovah, and indeed seems not to have the personal appreciation of God which was possessed by Leah. And so, here we have the confrontation between Rachel and Jacob. But we move on to the third strand, the conflict between Rachel and Leah. When Leah sees what is happening, she then responds by giving Zilpah, her maid, to Jacob, to wife. I want you to observe, please, the names that she gave the sons. And Leah said, a troop cometh. And she called his name Gad. And then the second time, she said, happy am I, for the daughters will call me blessed. And she called his name Asher. I only want to observe this, that it seems from the names of the sons given that Leah understood that what she was doing had not quite the approval of God. Remember her first four sons, those born of Jacob. Reuben, the Lord hath looked upon me. Simeon, the Lord hath heard. Levi, united. Judah, now will I praise the Lord. But in Gad and Asher, there is no reference to the Lord. Do you see the difference here? Four sons at the beginning, three of them, their names all linked with the Lord in the words of Leah. But here no mention of the Lord. Happy am I, she says. A troop cometh. And so I would suggest to you that there was a little unease in the heart of Leah regarding this union. A little unease. You see, competition between people is not a basis for God's blessing. We're learning that here. These two women are now competing with each other. And that is no way to bring about the blessing of God. In the things of the Lord Jesus today, competition between believers is no way to serve the Master. And in like manner here, we see the lesson that this competition just led to further difficulties. Reuben goes out in the days of the wheat harvest, so obviously some years have passed since Reuben was born, and he found mandrakes. Now, it is possible, although not certain, that mandrakes were seen as promoting fertility. Now, when Rachel saw this, she said to Leah, "Give me, I pray thee, of thy son's mandrakes." And Leah said, "Is it a small matter that thou hast taken my husband, and wouldest thou take away my son's mandrakes also?" Now Rachel makes a bargain with Leah, and the bargain is this. "Give me the mandrakes, and I will arrange that Jacob will be with you tonight." It would appear that married relations between Jacob and Leah had probably almost ceased. And Rachel is in a sense saying to Leah, "Now your relationship with Jacob has become almost nil, but I can still manipulate Jacob. I still can deal with Jacob. I've got a relationship with Jacob that you don't have, and I will arrange that he shall lie with thee tonight for thy son's mandrakes." Well, what was the result of that? Leah conceived and bare Jacob the fifth son, and she called his name Issachar. And Leah conceived and bare Jacob the sixth son, and called him Zebulun, and then she bore a daughter. So what has come out of the scheming machinations of Rachel? Simply that Leah now has another three children, Issachar, Zebulun, and Dinah, and so her anguish is surely compounded. So we learn another lesson. A lesson that her husband Jacob should now be learning, that scheming and seeking to solve problems in a human way simply add to the difficulties. Let us say again that competition in the things of God, seeking to achieve our ends by competitive means, comparing ourselves with others, is not the way of profitable service for the Master. At last, Rachel bears a son. Do you see, the answer did not come from the scheming work of anyone. In verse 22 we read, "And God remembered Rachel, and God hearkened to her, and opened her womb." So, the answer did not come from the scheming work of men or women. The answer came from God. "She bare a son. God hath taken away my reproach," and she called his name Joseph, and said, "The Lord shall add to me another son." She anticipated further fruitfulness. In the difficulties of life, in all the problems that we have seen during this time in the home of Jacob, the envy of Rachel, her barrenness, the time of intense competition between the two women, and all that we have noted went on at that time. Through all that, and looking at all that, let us remember that if we are in times of difficulty, and we are in times of problems, let us come into the presence of God and ask God to remember us. The answer will come not from our own scheming, but from bringing the matter into the presence of God. But notice that Scripture does record that God hearkened to Rachel and opened her womb. Now, it is therefore obvious that Rachel had brought the matter into the presence of God. Remarkable, because of how we have seen in chapter 30, Rachel responding. So it would appear that she was very like us. She was doing two things in parallel. She was praying about the problem, but she was trying to work out an answer her own way. So she brought the problem into the presence of God, but she liked to back that up with a little bit of working and a little bit of scheming and a little bit of conniving and a little bit of trying to arrange things. In other words, it was to be prayer plus Rachel's efforts. As we have already said, how like us she is. Yes, we can pray about something, but we try to work it out our own way as well, trusting that God will bless our own efforts and look at our way as being the way to solve the problem. So here we have this woman balancing both things together, but finding at the end of the day that the answer did not come from her efforts, but the answer came when God remembered Rachel. Now, let us turn to the third covenant, and we will read Genesis chapter 30 from verse 25. And it came to pass, when Rachel had borne Joseph, that Jacob said unto Laban, Send me away, that I may go into mine own place and to my country. Give me my wives and my children, for whom I have served thee, and let me go, for thou knowest my service which I have done thee. And Laban said unto him, I pray thee, if I have found favour in thine eyes, tarry, for I have learned by experience that the Lord hath blessed me for thy sake. And he said, Appoint me thy wages, and I will give it. And he said unto him, Thou knowest how I have served thee, and how thy cattle was with me, for it was little which thou hadst before I came, and it is now increased unto a multitude. And the Lord hath blessed thee since my coming. And now, when shall I provide for mine own house also? And he said, What shall I give thee? And Jacob said, Thou shalt not give me anything. If thou wilt do this thing for me, I will again feed and keep thy flock. I will pass through all thy flock today, removing from thence all the speckled and spotted cattle and all the brown cattle among the sheep, and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and of such shall be my hire. So shall my righteousness answer for me in time to come, when it shall come for my hire before thy face. Every one that is not speckled and spotted among the goats, and brown among the sheep, that shall be counted stolen with me. And Laban said, Behold, I would it might be according to thy word. And he removed that day the he-goats that were ring-straight and spotted, and all the she-goats that were speckled and spotted, and every one that had some white in it, and all the brown among the sheep, and gave them into the hand of his sons. And he set 3 days' journey betwixt himself and Jacob, and Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flocks. And Jacob took him rods of green poplar, and of the hazel and chestnut tree, and pilled white streaks in them, and made the white appear which was in the rods. And he set the rods which he had pilled before the flocks in the gutters of the watering troughs, when the flocks came to drink, that they should conceive when they came to drink. And the flocks conceived before the rods, and brought forth cattle ring-straight, speckled and spotted. And Jacob did separate lambs, and set the faces of the flocks toward the ring strait, and all the brown in the flock of Laban. And he put his own flocks by themselves, and put them not unto Laban's cattle. And it came to pass, whensoever the stronger cattle did conceive, that Jacob laid the rods before the eyes of the cattle in the gutters, that they might conceive among the rods. And when the cattle were feeble, he put them not in. So the feebler were Laban's, and the stronger Jacob's. And the man increased exceedingly, and had much cattle, and maidservants, and men servants, and camels, and asses. And he heard the words of Laban's sons, saying, Jacob hath taken away all that was our father's, and of that which was our father's hath he gotten all this glory. And Jacob beheld the countenance of Laban, and behold, it was not toward him as before. Now we come to the third covenant, which was made between Laban and Jacob. This is a strange story, and we must consider exactly what took place in the strange actions of Jacob as he sought to gain for himself the financial security which he regarded as being his due. We will look at this third covenant in three ways. I want to look firstly at Jacob's plea. Then I want to look secondly at Jacob's plan. And then I want to look thirdly at Jacob's prosperity. Let us just repeat that. We will look firstly at Jacob's plea, and then we will look secondly at Jacob's plan, and thirdly we will examine Jacob's prosperity. What then about Jacob's plea? We have now come, obviously, to the end of the second period of 7 years, and for 14 years, Jacob has been serving Laban well. Now Joseph is born, and Jacob turns to Laban and says, send me away that I may go unto mine own place and to my country. Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served thee, and let me go. Jacob is making a legitimate plea. It is a legitimate plea to return home. But Laban, of course, has other things in mind. What Laban says is, look, I know the value of service which you have done for me, and I've learned by experience that the Lord hath blessed me for thy sake. Now, tell me what you want to earn, and I will give it to you. Jacob here shows that he is a servant whom Laban considers he cannot lose. Laban, rather than making sure that Jacob was happier in earlier days, is now forced into the position of saying, look, just state your terms, and I will honour them. The plea, therefore, was that he might return home. Indeed, Jacob was able to say to him, before I came, you had little, but now it's increased unto a multitude, and the Lord hath blessed thee since my coming. Now, he says, I want to provide for my own home also. And clearly, during the 14 years of service, as we have already seen in an earlier lesson, Laban had not paid Jacob enough to make provision for Jacob's own household. So Jacob is now turning his attention to his own affairs and saying, I think it's time that I settle my own domestic situation. So that was the plea of Jacob. And indeed, it seems like a reasonable plea. 14 years away from home, let me go back. But Laban had something else in mind. And can I suggest that God had something else in mind? The years of discipline are not yet over. You see, we can carry out actions, which means that we have to reap what we sow. And it may well be that during that time of reaping, we'll long for that to be over. We'll long for it to be past and a thing of history. But the time has not yet come. Indeed, Jacob has about another 6 years yet to live in the land of his uncle Laban. God's time has not yet come. God has not spoken to Jacob and told them to go back. This is Jacob's own initiative. And Jacob is about to learn again that what is carried out under his own initiative without the word of God cannot be blessed of God. So, although Jacob wishes to return home, it is not yet time to do so. That was Jacob's plea. And as we are in the hands of God, it may well be that there are issues and matters which we really feel are now behind us, and it's time to move on. But it's not yet God's time, because the education that Jacob was receiving in the home of Laban has not yet been completed. Now, if that was Jacob's plea, I want you to observe secondly, please, Jacob's plan. Still the scheming Jacob. Still Jacob working it out for himself. The plan was this. Jacob says, I don't want anything from you, Laban. I only want you to do this thing. Pass through the flock today and remove from the flock every animal that is speckled or spotted or brown among the sheep, and the spotted and the speckled among the goats. Now, all the sheep that are speckled and spotted and brown, and all the goats that are speckled and spotted, they shall be mine. And so shall my righteousness answer for me in time to come. In other words, the actions that I have performed, the faithful stewardship that I've exercised, the service that I've given you will be rewarded in that all the speckled and spotted and brown will be mine. Laban thinks this to be a good arrangement. Behold, it might be according to thy word. But Laban does not leave the sorting out of the flock to Jacob. Remember what Jacob had said, I will pass through all thy flock today. But when it came to do it, it says in verse 35, and he, that is Laban, removed that day the he-goats that were ring-straked and spotted, and all the she-goats that were speckled and spotted. In other words, Laban separates the flock himself. He did not allow Jacob to do it. In other words, Laban perhaps still suspected that Jacob had some scheme in mind. And then, having separated out the two flocks, he set 3 days' journey betwixt them. So, the flock that was Laban's has been selected by Laban, and 3 days' journey now separates the two, so that Jacob cannot take from Laban's flock. The idea was this, that flock that Jacob had, as lambs were born, and as goats were born, all that was speckled and spotted, etc., would belong to Jacob, and any that were not would become Laban's. And so, it would appear that even out of the flock that Jacob had, a great number of those newly born would belong to Laban. And Laban sees this as a great bargain. It seems to be that the bargain is advantageous to Laban. Now observe, please, what his plan was and how he put it into action. Jacob takes rods of green poplar and of the hazel and chestnut trees, and he pulls the bark off it in strips, leaving strips on, so that as you looked at the bark of that rod, it was striped. There would be a dark stripe and a white stripe. Verse 37 tells us that he pulled white streaks in them. In other words, he peeled strips of bark from them to make them mixed, so that the actual piece of wood was mixed, white and brown, or white and black. And that, of course, was the kind of cattle that Jacob wished to have. He wanted them to be speckled and spotted. In other words, he wanted them to be brown and white, or just brown, and to be speckled with black and white. So, the appearance of the wood was the appearance that he desired from his flock to be mixed. What he then did was to place these pieces of wood in view of the animals when they came to water and when they conceived. No doubt he had in mind some belief or custom at that time that such an act would result in the animals that were born being mottled or spotted. In other words, to have the same colour combination as the wood which was in their view as they conceived. To increase his success rate, Jacob did something else. Verse 41 tells us this: it came to pass whensoever the stronger cattle did conceive, that Jacob laid the rods before the eyes of the cattle. In other words, he was careful to ensure that these rods of wood were before the eyes of the strongest cattle when they conceived, so that the young came from the strongest. By this means, the young who were spotted, etc., would have a higher survival rate than the young who belonged to Laban. Can you see the scheming mind here of Jacob, working it all out, pulling down the rods from the trees, stripping the bark off, maneuvering his sheep into place, making sure that everything was in order, constantly moving to increase his own wealth and to bring about his own prosperity? It was no surprise indeed that Jacob's flocks increased. They were the strong, whereas Laban's were the feeble. And so the wealth of Jacob increased exceedingly, and as time went on, and as the years passed, the sons of Laban gradually realized what was taking place. I have no doubt that during this time, Laban tried to change the arrangement. That is why Jacob can say, "Why, he changed my wages 10 times. It would appear that as he saw the result of the bargain working out, he tried to change the basis of their agreement. Now, listen to how Jacob puts it in chapter 31. "Your father hath deceived me and changed my wages 10 times, but God suffered him not to hurt me. If he said thus, 'The speckled shall be thy wages,' then all the cattle were speckled. And if he said thus, 'The ring straight shall be thy hire,' then bear all the cattle ring straight." In other words, as we have said, Laban was trying to move the basis of the agreement. He had agreed originally that all that was speckled and spotted and brown of the sheep should be Jacob's, and all that was speckled and spotted of the goat should be Jacob. But now he says, "Only the speckled shall be thy wages." And when he changed the agreement like that, behold, all the cattle were speckled. And then he changed it again and said, "Look, only the ring straight shall be thy hire. Then bear all the cattle ring straight." The ring straight cattle were those that have streaks of colour on them, perhaps even belts of colour round them. And so Jacob, as we have seen, was the subject to this kind of behaviour. "All the cattle, only speckled will be yours now, and they're all speckled. Only ring straight will be yours now, so they're all ring straight." What a remarkable series of events this was. So that was Jacob's plea, and that was Jacob's plan, and he put it into force with methodical thoroughness. Exactly what we would expect of Jacob. But let us now deal with Jacob's prosperity. Tell me, did this really work? it would appear that it did so because, as we have already seen, Jacob's prosperity increased, and the man increased exceedingly and had much cattle and maidservants and menservants and camels and asses, so much so that the sons of Laban claim that Jacob has taken away all that was our father's. Now, no doubt that was an exaggeration, but it must have seemed like that to the sons of Laban. But even Laban himself looked on Jacob with a different eye. And Jacob beheld the countenance of Laban, and behold, it was not toward him as before. So even Laban himself is feeling this now, and seems to be annoyed at Jacob. No matter how he has tried to change the bargain, Jacob's prosperity has still increased. And it would appear now that he is more prosperous even than Laban. But did it really work? If it worked then, would it work today? To take rods from the poplar, the hazel, and the chestnut tree, to strip bark from them, to put them before the animals as they conceived, and thus to ensure that the colour of their coats had the same colour combination as the wood in front of them. Well, we get the answer to this in Genesis chapter 31. Listen to what Jacob says in verse 9. Thus God hath taken away the cattle of your father and given them to me. Look also further down the chapter where Jacob speaks of a dream which he had. Verse 11, and the angel of God spake unto me in a dream, saying, Jacob. And I said, Here am I. And he said, Lift up now thine eyes and see, all the rams which leap up like cattle are ringstraked, speckled and grizzled, for I have seen all that Laban doeth unto thee. I am the God of Bethel, where thou anointest the pillar, etc. Now, clearly, beyond the scheming actions of Jacob, God was working. So, the success of Jacob was not due to all his scheming acts, but due to the work of God. He acknowledges this. Thus God hath taken away the cattle of your father. And in the dream, I have seen, says the angel of the Lord, all that Laban doeth unto thee. So we can look at this in two ways. At a human level, the reason for the increase in the flocks is given by Jacob when he speaks of this dream. The angel of God had said to him that the rams which leap upon the cattle are ring-straked and speckled. In other words, the rams who served the cattle had the coat that Jacob desired for the young. And therefore, the natural inherited properties of the coat went to the young, and the young belonged to Jacob. So God was working this way to ensure that the young did not belong to Laban. He was ensuring it by seeing to it that the rams who served the young had the right kind of coat. But behind that reason, that natural reason, there was a divine reason. It was God who was working. It was God who was bringing this about. And as Jacob became prosperous, he has to learn another lesson. That prosperity is something that should come from the hand of God. Not from scheming. Not from devious actions. Not even from the kind of agreement into which Jacob entered on its own. There was, on its own, no fault in that agreement, but God had to come in to bless it, or else it would have been worth nothing. And so we learn this, that no matter what we enter into in life, we must acknowledge that behind everything there is the hand of God. Is not this the lesson that Jacob has had to learn in the home of Laban? The lesson that we have repeated so often over and over again, that things must be left with God. And at least Jacob is prepared to admit here that God had taken away the cattle of the father. And Jacob does not emphasize his own cleverness in bringing about his own prosperity. So things have changed. The time in the home of Laban is almost over. Jacob is now a prosperous man, able to support his own household. And it is time to go. And the Lord said unto Jacob, return unto the land of thy fathers. God has spoken. If we are going through times when we feel the disciplining hand of God upon us, and we alone can discern that, no one else can point that out to you. We know. If that is the case, let us submit to it until the Lord speaks and says, return. Good to wait on him, and blessed is the day when we hear him clearly tell us, it is time to return, for I will be with thee.